Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
And we are back. Chicago Sports Radio 670 is the score. This is Inside the Clubhouse alongside Bruce Levine. I am Mike Esposito. Hour two of the show as we continue to talk Cubs offseason, we go out to the guest hotline presented by Circa Sports Illinois.
Demp, our buddy Ryan Dempster, host of Intentional Talk, along with Sierra Santos and Kevin Millar on MLB Network, in a bit of a hiatus until next March, but a great show. And Demp joining us right now at the on 670thescore.com. Demp, welcome. Good morning. Your thoughts on the World Series? Did it leave you wanting for more?
Yeah, it did actually. I was hoping it was going to go back to LA and that it would be a little bit more drama. But I think there was enough drama in that Game 5 to give it its Hollywood script that it needed. And I had a chance to run into I'm going to name drop here, but I had a chance at Game 5 to talk with Ron Howard a little bit. And Ron's production company is actually filming the MLB World Series video, and he said, you know, the Dodger fan in me is loving this, but the Hollywood producer in me is hoping this goes to Game 7. And I think, you know, the hard part is when the World Series ends, we know there's not baseball again for a few months, and that as baseball lovers, that's hard for us to kind of digest for a little while.
So inning 5 of game number 5 left me with a horrible taste in my mouth as a baseball fan, because you had a Yankee team that played great most of the year, came out on top, was considered the best team in the American League most of the year, and then you had the Dodgers, who were not considered the best team in the National League but end up being the best team there and the World Series champ. How do you get your head around inning 5 if you're a Yankee fan, if you're a baseball fan, when you're watching it and going, I guess this can happen in the World Series just like in spring training, but it sure looked like spring training to me.
For some reason,
yeah,
it is
really hard to wrap your head around what went on. Like if you were to say, in this game, there's going to be two errors, there's going to be a guy doesn't cover first, there's going to be a balk and a catcher's interference, you would have thought, okay, one team did three of those things, the other one did two of them, and they were out the course of the whole game. The fact that all of those things happen in one inning is just mind-boggling, you know, and you wonder why. I don't think you'll ever be able to point your finger on, you know, or put your finger on it or point out to why it happened. It just did, you know, and the game gets speeding up, you know, and like, it's interesting, right? Like, if you give any team an extra out in the playoffs, you're going to pay for it. If you give a really good team an extra, two extra outs, three extra outs, like, it's just so hard to do. And Gerrit Cole almost made it. Isn't it ironic? Like, he picks his teammates up, the strikeout of Edmund, the strikeout of Ohtani, and all of a sudden you got a situation where you got all you got to do is cover first base, and that's the deciding factor. Like, and like, hats off to the Dodgers after that. Freddie Freeman hit a really tough pitch for a base hit in on his hands in a two-strike count. Teoscar Hernandez came through with the double. Like, it wasn't all the Yankees. They still could have survived and got through that, but then it came down to two clutch hits. So I just still can't believe it happened. When I look back at all those moments happening, that's how it played out. But, you know, that's what good teams take advantage of that. And, you know, for the Dodgers, they were the better team in the series. They were the better team in the postseason. Once they beat the Padres, they rolled, and they deserve to be sitting there as World Series champions.
Demp, we'll get to the Cubs in a second here. One more World Series question for me. And Dave Roberts getting a lot of platitudes after that second title. The first one, of course, was 2020, but pressed a lot of the right buttons in this series.
Yeah, he did. And it started in game four of the NLDS against the Padres. Dave Roberts pushed every right button. Like, you got to remember, they're down 2-1. And every time he pointed the bullpen, he had that thing set up and lined up. He found the right pocket, as they call it, pocket of hitters for his relievers to match up. And those guys did their job, and that got them to 2-2 and allowed them to win that series. And then I think he just found that right avenue again and that right way to do that again as far as how to manage the bullpen. And ironically enough, isn't it funny that, like, here's a team who had all these starting pitchers go down, and they did bullpen games and had relievers start games, and then he finishes, caps off the World Series with arguably his best starter in the postseason, Walker Buehler, to go out there and finish the game. So they did whatever they needed to do, and you know, it becomes a sprint at the end of the season, and nobody, I mean, he ran it like a world-class champion.
As a Chicago guy, and you'll always be a Chicago guy, no matter whether you work here or live here, and you look at the Chicago Cubs and the decision that Cody Bellinger must make by Monday, whether to accept $30 million real dollars for playing in 2025 for the Cubs or walk away and try to get a longer-term deal. He has an option, obviously, for 2025 and 26 at his behest only. With that in mind, Demp, how do you weigh it? I mean, we know that Boris is the agent and that he likes to maximize out his players' potential as far as making money and getting big contracts. How do you look at it?
I imagine he's going to opt out. I mean, you know, his age, you know, he didn't have the year he had the year before. But that being said, you know, I think there's probably room there for a little bit longer term deal with somebody. Somebody, teams are looking to upgrade. And when you look at the market and who's available from a position player standpoint, when you get past Juan Soto and Anthony Santander, you know, now you're starting to get into the same category. So I imagine he does, but that, you know, and I imagine the Cubs are trying to want to re-sign him, but you know, that's part of the whole game. And you got to look at it, what's best for my future. And you know, I know Cody's probably humming and hawing, you know, because if you don't do that and you go out there and you have a tough year, then you're probably looking at substantially less. If you opt in and you take the deal and you go out there and you become an all-star and you have another great year, then sure, you get another big free agent deal. But yeah, tough one, but also, like, good for him. He put himself in this position, and I think either way, he wins out.
$30 million doesn't sound like that much anymore, right?
Isn't it crazy?
Yeah, it really is.
It's pretty
crazy.
Amazing what the annual value is nowadays for players, but it is the market what it is.
Well, and we're looking at it too, and I'm looking. I've got the list in front of me. Garrett Cole can opt out of 36. Cody Bellinger's is just under 30, and Blake Snell just opted out of about 32, and he's a guy that would fit with the Cubs, wouldn't he?
He'd fit with 29 other teams, including one he just opted out of. So, I mean, you know, I think he proved the harm of holding out as a starting pitcher. If you look at all the guys that waited, especially as starting pitchers, you can't mimic spring training no matter where you are. Jordan Montgomery did the same thing and had a horrible season in Arizona. Like, at least Blake Snell was able to figure it out and lock back into the Cy Young candidate that he was, throwing a no-hitter. He was nasty down the stretch. If he gets a whole spring training under his belt, he is elite. He's one of the elite pitchers in the league. He doesn't give up hits. He strikes out a lot of people. Why wouldn't you want him in your rotation? Like, you know, sometimes I see these guys and they go out there and they pitch great or they play great, especially the pitchers. They pitch really great. And front offices and teams try to find every reason why they can while this guy will fail. Like, they try to justify it in their head. Well, you know, he walks too many guys. Or, oh, man, he doesn't go deep in the ball. They find every reason, yet then the guy goes out there and has another good year and another good year. And, well, he's getting older now. Is he? Like, at some point, we just got to sit there and look at the back of the baseball card and go, this is kind of who the guy is. He goes out there and he pitches pretty great. Like, he might have a year or two where he doesn't, but over the course of a five-year contract, he's probably going to have four really good years. And so he is who he is. This guy is capable of throwing no-hitters every time. Any team, I think, should be lucky enough to have a guy like that in the rotation.
Ryan Dempster, our guest on Inside the Clubhouse, Mike Esposito, Bruce Levine, until 11 today. We talk baseball every Saturday here on The Score on Inside the Clubhouse. Demp, when you look at the Cubs and their season, what stood out for you as far as what was missing? What was not there when you looked at the Chicago Cubs? And were you surprised that Council didn't necessarily have the impact that other people felt he might have by making this a 90-win team automatically just because of who he is?
I will say that I think, personally, that I think managers win less games than people realize. I think that they experience is huge, and obviously it can play a huge factor. But the players win the games. And you know, there are moments throughout the season where a manager can have an impact. But at the end of the day, it comes down to the personnel that you have. And while I love the Cubs and I love the players that they have, and these guys are out there trying to win, when you look at statistically the numbers, the production wasn't there. I mean, when you have six guys with double-digit home runs on your entire roster, there's teams out there that have six guys in their starting lineup every day with 20-plus home runs. So, and it just is a reality, right? Like, I talked to Dave Roberts at the World Series. I'm like, Doc, man, you are doing such a great job with these guys managing. He goes, Ryan, he, like, stops me. And he looks me in the eyes. He goes, I have great players, dude. Like, the better players I have, the better manager I am. That's just the reality. And, like, we can try and find reasons why. And like, can a bad manager lose games for you? Absolutely. I think more of that happens than a good manager winning ball games for you. So, and I think Craig is a tremendous manager, and I think that we're given a little bit heftier personnel and a little bit more offensive explosion, because, like, pitching-wise, down, you know, top to bottom, I thought they did a pretty good job. I mean, Imanaga, incredible season. Justin Steele, when healthy, obviously missed the time with the hamstring. Another great year. Jameson Taillon, good year. Really good year, man. Like, some relievers had some really good years. Like, there's guys who had really quality stuff, but, like, you can't manage against injuries and you can't manage against lack of production. So offensively, it needs to be more explosive. If you're going to compete with these big boys, it can't just be offensive explosion for a month. Like, Pete Armstrong, what you threw up in September, if you throw that up for the whole year, yeah, you're darn right the Chicago Cubs are going to win more ball games, because what he did in September was phenomenal. But, like, that's now over with. April's going to come around, and we're going to need you to do that when it's cold in April. We're going to need you to do that in May. Like, those kind of things, you need better ball players in order to win more games. That's just kind of factually how it is.
Demp, that actually leads perfectly into what Bruce and I were discussing coming onto the show, is that the Cubs, if they really wanted to, could bring back the exact same lineup if Belly opts in. If Belly opts out, obviously that opens up a hole. But they have a lot of guys that are under contract for next year. So I'm going to elevate you. I'm going to ceremoniously make you Jed Hoyer's top man there. What are you suggesting to Jed in terms of a potential shakeup to that position player lineup?
Yeah, I think obviously adding a high impact bat. I love Anthony Santander out of Baltimore. I just think that he's a run producer. He hits from both sides of the plate. He's a good outfielder. He's not, you know, he's got a good arm in right field, you know, but I understand you have Seiya Suzuki. So then you got to weigh those things. But, like, here's a guy who's hitting 40 home runs, you know, and he's coming on a platform year. So can he do this every year? You have all these things, these metrics that you got to measure. I get it. But, like, the longer your lineup, and, like, it also sends a message. Like, I want great players. I don't want good players. I want great players. I want that produces winning. How can we win? How can we get the right guys to win? And, like, you know, if we just have a month like we had, or if we just don't have those months where we have, okay. I mean, you can talk about it, or we can be about it. And so, you know, I think you just need to sit there and evaluate what the standard is. is the standard great or is the standard very good? Is the standard very good or is the standard good? I think if you up the standard and you put that pressure, you know, and realize what you did last week doesn't matter. It's what you do today. And, like, we trust in the process, but at the end of the day, we want results, too. Results are good. And so, you know, the deeper the lineup, we battle through injuries. You look at teams, they go through injuries all the time. Why did the Dodgers win? Not because they spent, you know, $1 billion on players. Like, sure, they got Shohei Ohtani and they got Yamamoto. Yamamoto missed half the year, you know. Like, they had depth. You need depth. You need seven starting pitchers. You need, especially in today's game where guys get hurt, you need a lineup that if one of your star players goes down, can the guy fill in and have an OPS over 650? You know, like, that's what you need. Otherwise, it just gets exposed, and then you're sitting there, and you have to be perfect in games. You can't, you know, allow things to slip away. So why not create depth and friendly competition? Friendly competition is great, man. Like, that causes a guy to stop him from getting complacent, and it allows guys to get the best out of themselves, and ultimately you're going to win more ball games.
Will Venable,
say Juan Soto, but I don't think that's even an option, to be honest with you. You know what I'm saying?
You got 50 million times 12. I think you got a shot.
Hey, defer it. Start up a hedge fund that pays that out 10 years down the road, you know, like before Major League Baseball tells us we can't do that anymore.
Yeah, well, they did it once with Ohtani. Why not? But
eventually they'll tell us we can't, Bruce. Might as well do it while you can.
Ryan Dempster with us on Inside the Clubhouse for just a few more minutes. And Demp, Will Venable, the new manager of the White Sox, how did you and Sierra and Millar get your heads around 121 losses and moving forward, how to get out of that type of hole with a new young manager and a new young front office?
Yeah, I personally love the hire. I love it for multiple reasons. I liken the hire a little bit to what Baltimore did with Brandon Hyde. You know, Will has had a great opportunity to coach first base and bench coach and associate manager and stuff like that, where you get that experience and you're around people who are really successful at it. Obviously, he's, you know, been firsthand with Bochy and winning World Series, so you see what it takes. And this is a rebuild. This isn't – they're not winning anything anytime soon. So how do you establish a culture and how to play the game and build it from the ground up? And you look at what Hyder did in Baltimore, a bunch of young players, and they got to a point where now they're at that tipping point of, you know, can they win now with this young position player dynamic? And I think that that's what Will's going to have there. It's going to be some rough years, you know, but the future is ahead of you, and then you got to establish it. So it's going to be a while. It's going to be 4 or 5 years, I feel like, before the White Sox are competitive again. That's just reality. And so you want somebody who knows the game really well, who can teach these young players the importance of, you know, every single individual pitch and winning that pitch and winning that at bat and then winning that game within the season. And he's got a lot of experience, and he's a smart, bright person. And I watched him every spring training when I go down with the Cubs, when he's with the Cubs, and like first one of the field, and the amount of things he's looking to try and make the team better. And I think that, you know, it's a great hire by Chris Getz and the White Sox for what they need for right now. And it's going to be a tough go for White Sox fans for a little while. But hopefully on the other side of that, I would love to see them competing for a World Series again down the road in the future.
Demp, one of the areas of need for the Cubs, and certainly you could argue that if the Cubs had a lockdown closer, they would have been a playoff team last year. You look at the free agents, though, on the closer side, a lot of old guys, a lot of, hey, future Hall of Famers like Kenley Jansen and Aroldis Chapman, but those are not necessarily guys that you're going to sign to help you next year. If you're the Cubs, what do you do at the back end of that bullpen heading into next year?
Yeah, bullpens are so tricky nowadays, man. I honestly don't know, because the dynamic of the reliever has changed so much, in the sense of, hey, it's super hard to find a lockdown closer who's not going to get $100 million, right? So if you get a lockdown closer, that's not available right now. And then you see, do you buy a reliever high because he had a great year, and then all of a sudden next year is not as, you know, I find real relievers in today's game are so volatile because of the max velocity. Throw as hard as you can every pitch, create as much spin as you can. Oh, you blew out. That's okay. Go get somebody else who's having a good week in Double A, and we'll bring him up because his numbers equate to the program really well. You know what I mean? Like, that's if we're being honest, that's what's happening. Is like, guys are down in the minor leagues, they're throwing hard, they got good spin rates, so we bring them up even though they can't command a breaking ball, but they're having a good couple weeks, so they fit into the model, and we bring them up, and then we just turn them over like crazy, and guys blow out all the time, or they're hurt all the time. And so reliability of relievers, it's hard for a front office. It's hard for me to go, oh, I'll give you a 3 or 4 year deal at this much, because you don't. The emphasis isn't stay healthy. The emphasis is max velocity, max spin, and that's leading to maximum amount of injuries. So I love some of the guys they have in-house. I love the thought of having a closer from the ground up. Like, I love what Porter Hodge brings. I love this kid's work ethic. I love his stuff. Now, can he stay healthy? Because if he can, you have a closer. You have a guy who can go out there and do it. And then you build around that from within. And can you sign a reliever here or there at a good price? Sure. But also, don't bargain hunt unless you really see something. Like, otherwise, you're just flipping a coin and you're going, well, hopefully, if all the stars align, he's going to have that great year again. And it's like, I want a little reliability, but at the same time, there's a lot of unpredictability and a lot of volatility in relievers right now because of the demands of what they're asked to do. You know, 95 is not good enough. I need 97. A really nasty sweeper is not good enough, if we're going to call it that. Now, we need it even to spin more. And then, oh, my elbow hurts, or, oh, my shoulder's not quite as good. That's what we're seeing out of relievers across the board, top to bottom, on every team now.
Mark me as a table for one for not wanting Ohtani to come back as a pitcher. 30 seconds or less, Demp, your thoughts on Ohtani coming back and risking his body, knowing that he's the greatest hitter player on the planet right now.
All right, here's my evaluation of this. I don't want Ohtani to starting pitch again because I feel the risks of him hurting his elbow again are massive, and that could lead to him losing his bat in the lineup. And if you think I want that bat out of the lineup, you're crazy. Those bat and those legs, we saw it this year, 50-50. So I will say this, Bruce. I am a huge endorser for Shohei Ohtani to play the outfield every day and have him as your closer. Because if you do that, in 3 years of closing in the big leagues, just from somebody who went through it with experience, I know that's not a thing we value, but as somebody who experienced it, my 3 years of closing, my arm never hurt, not one time. And I think that the impact that you can have him warm up inside in the bottom of the eighth inning or the top of the ninth. He plays catch with the outfielders every day. He gets his 8 warm-up pitches. And I think that Shohei Ohtani could be Major League Baseball's version of what Mark Cossé was to Cal State Fullerton in the College World Series, where he can go out there and hit 2 home runs in a game. And then when you need him to come get 3 outs in the ninth inning, he could throw 100 and do what he did in the WBC.
That would be super, super exciting, Demp. Yeah. I love it. Demp, have good holiday season coming up here soon, and always a pleasure to have you on. Best to Kelly and the family. Talk to you soon.
You got it, guys. Thanks for having me on. Happy holidays down Thanksgiving. I'll see you soon.
Take care. Ryan Dempster from Intentional Talk, and just one of the more delightful, intelligent guys in the game.
And I love the Ohtani idea. That's an interesting take.
I'm with him.
I did not know the Mark Cossé story. I had not heard that one before. So he came in and closed that College World Series. We will have lots more to discuss here as we continue on Inside the Clubhouse. More on Will Venable, more on the Cubs offseason when we come back. We are going Chicago bound. And before we do that, we're going to remind you that before Chicago takes on Arizona, tune in tomorrow from 12 till 3 for your local Ford dealers pregame show right here on 670 The Score. Presented by Aurelio's, Molly Olin Krutz and Patrick Manley will be live at Wonderverse in Oak Brook as they get you set for the game. And then immediately after, they will have instant reaction from Wonderverse on the Great Clips postgame show presented by Sony Pictures, Wonderverse Chicago, and TimberTech Decking and Railing. All of it right here on 670 The Score and the Odyssey app. We are Chicago bound next. It's Bruce and Mike here on Inside the Clubhouse on The Score.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm going to tell you something that you all should know. Chicago is the greatest place I ever know. I'm going to stay in this town. I'm going to live in this town. I'm going to live in Chicago, the greatest place around.
The Cubs and Sox are off for the winter, but inside the clubhouse starts the hot stove discussion now. Inside the clubhouse takes a look at which free agents and trades the Cubs and Sox should explore. Will they trade for a top pitcher or player? Is free agency the way the North and South Siders go? You help them make the call. 312-644-6767.
First pitch to De La Cruz. He hits a fly ball, right center. Yastrzemski has it! And Blake Snell has pitched the first no-hitter of his brilliant career here in Cincinnati.
And there is, courtesy of NBC Bay Area, the no-hitter from this past season. Blake Snell from the San Francisco Giants has just opted out of his contract, and he is the subject of our Chicago Bound here on Inside the Clubhouse. Bruce Levine, Mike Esposito here with you. So, Bruce, a 31-year-old Blake Snell hits the free agent market and an intriguing name, potentially, for your Chicago Cubs.
Again, walking away from $30 million, that was his second year of a $61 million contract he signed with the Giants before 2024. Again, $30 million doesn't mean much anymore, Mike. Mm-hmm. He has greener pastures to look at. Him and his agent, Scott Boras, decided it was time to try for another long-term deal. He didn't get, you know, after winning a Cy Young in 2023, he did not get the offers. He did not get the 6-7 year offers. They weren't out there for him last year. So he signed a 2-year deal with the Giants very late, meaning already through spring training. And the beginning of his year, as Ryan Dempster pointed out with us a few minutes ago, he was not a very good pitcher. He had an ERA of, you know, 7 or 8. He was just clunky. He had an injury, and then he comes back from the injury, and he's Blake Snell again, the best pitcher in baseball.
Yeah.
How do you get your head around it for the Cubs? How do you quantify or qualify him going forward for you? How much is he worth to you? How much will he be looking for? Does he really fit into your team as the ace of the staff with an already very good starting rotation for the Cubs?
Well, first off, and I completely agree with Demp, the starters who missed spring training last year, and Snell was one of them, Jordan Montgomery the other one, that come to mind immediately, that they had long free agency periods, didn't sign right away, missed spring training. That is a big red flag in my mind, and you just explained how Snell started very, very slowly. Then after the injury, after coming back, he was then a dominant pitcher again. And, you know, the numbers aren't going to blow you away. 5-3, a 3.12 ERA, 20 games started, and 2.43 ERA and a 1.04 WHIP are excellent numbers, and we heard the no-hitter there against the Reds, but it was an uneven year. So you're paying these guys, and as you said, $30 million is not a heck of a lot anymore in salary terms, but do you want to spend that if you're the Cubs? Again, Snell is 31, pitched at 31 this past season, so to me, do the Cubs go on a short-term, high-dollar contract? Do you fit him into your starting rotation with guys like Tyone, guys like Steele, who you mentioned earlier? He's got another 2 years of control with Steele. Shota is going to be a bargain for the remaining 3 years of his contract. But past that, how much do you trust Jordan Wicks? How much do you trust Javier Assad?
Well, and again, you talk about Snell and his uneven year. It was real uneven, but if you look at how he finished, he was arguably the best pitcher in baseball.
Sure.
So Is it what have you done for me lately? Do you trust the durability? Do you trust the high walk volume of this pitcher? Do you trust him going to 32 to giving him a contract for more than 2 years, 3 years? What exactly is it going to look like for Blake Snell? So, again, I do believe the Cubs are going to make a starting pitcher a priority for them, even though most people will say, gee, they need that closer. They need that middle-of-the-order guy. I think Hoyer is going to go with, you know, trying to improve all of that, but I think a big-time starting pitcher, somebody that can dominate, I think that's what they try to look for, either via trade or free agency.
And we certainly saw it this year with the Cubs. Justin Steele got hurt on opening night. Jameson Taillon started the season on the IL. So you had multiple extra starting pitchers required. And Dempster and I, we were just talking about this. You need 8 or 10 starting pitchers throughout the course of a season.
You really do. You have to have the resources. So what are the resources? Guys that come up from your minor leagues, like a Brown, like a Wicks, you know, like a Cade Horton, hopefully sometime again in 2025. You need that influx of young arms from your system, but you also have to have an inventory of guys that can start. I mean, there's been no more valuable pitcher for the Chicago Cubs over the last 2 years than Javier Assad. Okay. You want me to start? I'll start. You want me to be a middle reliever? I'm a middle reliever. You want me to go into a game late because we ran out of other pitchers? I'll do it. He has been phenomenal. He's not a great pitcher. He's a really good pitcher. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he's a guy that you need Javier Assad's when you talk about depth in your organization. You need guys that can go out there and throw 5 or 6 good innings on a regular basis, not blow you away with stuff or a 98 mile an hour fastball, but durability, reliability, which they say is one of the more important abilities. You have to show up, and he shows up. So when you're putting together a pitching staff, and I give Hoyer credit for this too, before the year, he said, we're going to have to go 6 or 7 deep in our rotation. We're going to have to continue to look for more bullpen guys during the year. They signed 27 pitchers from April through September, Mike, to help fortify bullpen needs and pitching needs that they wanted to have. They never, him and Carter Hawkins never stopped working. It paid off. I mean, the bullpen that they started the season with and the bullpen they ended the year with, until Merriweather came back from an injury in September, Drew Smyly was the only pitcher left on that pitching staff
yep.
from opening day in the bullpen until the end of the year. So what does that tell you? I mean, they went through 1 million guys, and they did it pretty successfully. The bullpen was not reliable the beginning part of the year. May and June was really awful as it was evolving, but they didn't give up, and they got better. So, again, if you can get a guy to pitch 6 innings of quality baseball 30 times a year, how much is that worth to you on that year? How much is it worth to you in the long run?
So I'm a Blake Snell fan. I would love to see him here. You would have to work out the dollars. A text to us from the 815, Bruce, opines that why would Snell take a short-term deal without the qualifying offer attached, and this is from James. James thinks he'll get a 5-year or 6-year deal from a contender. I don't know that there's going to be that out there for a 31 going on 32-year-old guy. What do you think?
What did he mean by not qualifying offer being attached?
He's essentially saying that it's just money, right? You don't have to give up a pick.
Right.
It's a free
agent.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. I mean, again, what is the free agent market going to look like with the RSN issues for multiple
right.
teams out there? Will it be a robust free agent market? Will it be only a robust free agent market for the top players like it was for Yamamoto and Ohtani last year?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. After you see Soto sign, after you see Corbin Burnes signed, what is it going to look like for the rest of the free agents out there? How many teams are going to be looking? Now, as franchises evolve and change, excuse me, they, Mike, they, you know, the New York Mets, if they don't get Soto and they're out there spending again, they want to be a world champion. Okay. So Cone is going to go out there and spend more money. Will he sign a top pitcher and a top hitter? Will he sign Santander? Will he sign Snell? You know, the Giants have Buster Posey as their new baseball, head baseball guy. My friend Zach Manassian is now the general manager of the Giants. Will they be looking for a guy like Bellinger and somebody to fill in for Snell now that Snell has declared free agency? Will they be in the market for Snell in a longer term? Maybe. So these are things we're looking at. So the evolving of franchises. But how many franchises can afford 30 million times 6 or 7? Not too many.
Not too many. And as we wrap up the Snell conversation, we'll continue in our last segment talking about free agency and the Cubs and the Sox. Over his last 17 starts, Snell a 2.05 ERA and 92 and a third innings. So the dominance was there. But your question is the one that hangs over it with all of the regional sports television issues, which is where a lot of the team's money comes from. What is this free agency market going to look like? And we're going to find out very soon, and we'll continue to talk about it as we return. One more segment for us before Saturday suckage with Steve Rosenblum, but one more with us here on Inside the Clubhouse. It's Bruce Levine and Mike Esposito here on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Fowler hits a fly ball to deep center field. Back goes Davis. Back near the center field fence at the wall. And that ball is a home run. Home run, Dexter Fowler. I had to wait. Davis leaping up, had his glove above that 9-foot barrier. I couldn't tell if he caught it. He started walking away.
And that's how Game 7 started 8 years ago today. We know how it ended, Bruce Levine, and that was with the Cubs winning the 2016 World Series.
It didn't feel like a win until it was one, right?
I think I aged 10 years watching the end of that game.
That was one of the more sensational World Series ending games ever, let alone, you know, there was a Chicago team. But where have they gone? We have some breaking news.
Yeah, we do. Breaking news on The Score presented by BetQL. Smarter bets start with BetQL. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. And the Yankees wasting no time in making a decision on Anthony Rizzo. They have declined his option for next year. So you mentioned it as we learned this. This opens up a Cody Bellinger opportunity, doesn't
Cody
it?
Cody Bellinger would be open in a lot of places. San Francisco, for sure. The Yankees. Certainly other places that are going to be looking for a left-handed bat. Now, does that mean that Rizzo won't go back there for a lesser amount of money? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, watching Rizzo play hurt, you know, with his broken fingers coming back in the World Series and then seeing how his body had broken down and not being able to be the defensive star player that he was in the past, it was kind of hard to watch. And, mm-hmm. and that leads us, you know, in our last couple minutes here to talking about, you know, where have they gone? Where have the stars gone? The Cubs were obviously right about not signing those guys to long-term deals, as it's
right.
turned out.
Yeah, the team in 2016 that won the series, I thought would be, I don't want to say dynasty. I don't want to imply that I thought they were going to win a million World Series, but you certainly thought that that core would be around a lot longer than they were. And as you know, pan out 8 years, I mean, the only one still playing at a star level is the guy you let walk for nothing, Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah, that was a mistake. And, you know, Jed Hoyle will say that was right at that point. The Cubs were dumping salary. They had started with non-tendering him, with trading I'm spacing out.
Well, they got rid of Baez. They traded him to the Mets.
I'm talking about that
Jason
year,
Hayward.
The year that they
when they non-tendered Schwarber.
Right. So anyway, you know, the point was they were dumping out of money at that time. That wasn't the case with Rizzo and with Baez and with Bryant. But you know what? You move on. You wish him well. You hope Bryant and Baez can come back and have good careers. The Cubs are moving forward. And I'll be at the GM meetings, Mike, starting Monday for the Score. And we'll see exactly where the general managers are at, where Hoyer's at, where Getz is at. It'll be interesting.
It'll be interesting. It'll be fun. We'll look forward to your reports, my friend. And it's been great joining you. And we'll tune in for those GM meetings updates.
I can be followed on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine, now called X, of course, on our website, 670score.com. We have people to thank.
Yep, we want to thank our guests, Ryan Dempster, Bruce Bochy. Great job by our producer, Alex Kuhn. And thanks to you, Bruce. We appreciate it and look forward to sitting in again sometime soon.
Mike, as I always call you, the Ben Zobrist of the Score. You do everything and you do it all well.
Appreciate that very much. Everybody, stick around. Steve Rosenblum, some Saturday suckage coming up next. He will have you until college football, Oregon and Michigan. Until then, this has been Inside the Clubhouse, and we've enjoyed talking to you here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.